Hi, everybody. My name's Travis, and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is September 30th, 2002. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor, and I sponsor people. So having a home group and a sponsor and sponsoring people puts me square in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's a great place for a guy like me to be because I like to isolate, and I like to get up in my head and overthink things and try to figure things out on my own. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to have self-reflection, prayer, and meditation, and combine these things with an outside objective viewpoint of, you know, the things that we learn in the fifth step when we share this stuff and later on. And continuing to practice the principles of the steps. So I need all this stuff to help keep me sober. And, you know, Andy finally got around to the topic right there in the last, like, minute of his talk. And I was going to tell him that I had it. And don't worry, that I was going to cover the topic for him. But he stole all my thunder. So he did it all right there at the very end. So, but my story is real similar. It's funny. I was going to tell a story similar to what Andy did. I was about 3 years sober and I had gone through the steps. I had made amends. I was working with a sponsor. I was sponsoring guys. I was active in my home group. I was going to like 5 meetings a week. I was praying. I was meditating. Had a relationship with the God of my understanding, you know, spiritual. Going to conferences, I'm doing the AA deal, right? I'm doing everything that we're told is the toolkit that we need to be recovered in AA. And I'm doing that stuff, and I'm really trying my best and my hardest to participate in it. And one day, there's a knock on my door, and it's a drug dealer friend of mine, and he comes over, and he explains that his wife and her mother are going to take the kids from him unless he can prove that he's not using drugs, and they want him to give them a sample of his urine to show that he's clean. And he knew that I had disappeared from the party scene and was sober, and he wanted to know if I would provide him with the urine sample. And all my life, the biggest thing I've learned about myself and Alcoholics Anonymous through the things I talked about, inventory and self-reflection, is that I'm full of self-centered fear. And I wouldn't have been able to put that name on it prior to coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wouldn't have known that the main way that that manifests itself is that I'm deathly afraid of what other people think of me. I want to be liked. I want to be accepted. If I'm hanging out with the jocks, I want them to think I'm athletic enough. If I'm hanging out with the smart kids, I want them to think I'm intelligent enough or cool enough, whatever the case is, musically talented enough. Doesn't matter. Fill in the blank. I want people to like me and accept me, and I'm definitely afraid of that. And I know today that that's self-centered fear. And so when this friend of mine asked me to do that, that's what popped into my mind, was that self-centered fear that I want this guy to like me. Should I do this or not? And yes, I know. I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have tools for this, right? Call your sponsor. Call a trusted friend in AA. Say a prayer. Ask for God's guidance. There's all sorts of things that we're told. Pause when agitated or doubtful, right? There's all sorts of tools we're given. But in that moment, I was deathly afraid, and none of that stuff came to mind. And I remember I went into my bathroom, and I was staring at myself in the mirror, looking at myself eye to eye, giving myself the pep talk to be like, go out there and tell him no. You do not have to do this. Do not do this. This is dishonest. You don't want to do this. Go tell him no. And then I did it, and I gave him the urine sample, and I was all up in my head about what I had just done, because as I mentioned, I was trying to live my life by the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and be spiritual and be honest. And I had just done one of the most dishonest things in my life. And I don't know what would have happened if I had sat in my house with that going on in my head. Luckily, that's not my experience, because here's where the plug for service work and commitments in AA meetings. It was Thursday night at 6:20, and I had the key to a church, and I had to start the coffee. And so there wasn't time for me to stay in my house and isolate by myself and think about what am I going to do, or why did I just do that, or oh my God, I'm a failure in AA. I had something in AA to do, and I did it. And I went to the church, and I opened it up, and I started making the coffee. And the first person that showed up was one of my trusted friends in AA, and I told him the whole story. And he said, "Trav, you know, try to calm down. You've had an experience in Alcoholics Anonymous that might be beneficial and helpful to somebody someday. You might not see that now, but you might later." And then I went to the meeting. I don't remember anything that was shared at that meeting. I was probably up in my head the entire time. And my sponsor had always told me I could call him anytime, but to try not to call after 9 o'clock at night unless it was an emergency. And our meeting was from 7:30 to 8:30. And I got home like spot on right at 9, maybe like 9:03. And to me, this seemed like an emergency. Like I said, in my mind, I had done one of the most dishonest things I'd ever done in Alcoholics Anonymous, or in my life for that matter. And so I called him and I told my sponsor what I had done. And he said some of the greatest things that somebody could say to me, because he let me off the hook. He said, "Hey, Travis, no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. Try to get some sleep. Call me tomorrow." And that was basically the gist of the conversation. And it was beautiful, and it was perfect, and it was short, and it was sweet. He quoted the big book to me, the perfect line of, "We can't do it perfectly. We talk about progress, not perfection here." And he let me off the hook, and I called him the next morning, and we talked through it some more. And the reason I tell that story is because it's a really good example of what I do to stay sober in times of crisis. For me, that was a time of crisis. I was in a self-imposed crisis in my head about being a failure, about being dishonest, about not living up to principles in AA. And I did everything after the fact, right? Like, I had a commitment in AA. I went to the meeting. I called my sponsor. We talked about it. I talked to other alcoholics about it. And like Andy said, in times of crisis, it's very similar, like what we're doing here in this health crisis, this pandemic, is really similar to what we would do in the holidays, right? It's the same thing. Go to lots of meetings, pray and meditate, practice the steps, practice the principles we learn, talk to my sponsor, talk to the guys I sponsor, try to get out of my head, try to be of service, ask God for help, ask God for forgiveness. Everything that Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me is what I still want to do. The challenge now is that's very different than the holidays, because we're being mandated by the governor of Virginia and the CDC and the president to try not to meet in groups of more than 10, like anywhere. Like, don't go to a movie theater. Don't go to a restaurant. And this is all designed maybe not to prevent me from getting sick, but to like help society, to help the country out, to be a responsible citizen and socially responsible. That idea of flattening the curve, right? If we can slow the spread of the disease down, our healthcare system can handle it. If a million people all get sick next week, the healthcare system can't handle it. So it's a bit challenging when we're told not to meet. Like, how do I do what's right to treat my alcoholism and not put myself or other people at risk of contracting COVID-19? And so I've been to meetings in person. this past week, and I've been to meetings in Zoom this past week. I think what's important here is that we need to stay, like Andy said, we need to be open-minded and flexible and creative in our approach to how we handle recovery. Like, how do I stay sober? How do I stay connected to my home group and my trusted friends in AA and my sponsor? And we do it this way. We do it on the phone. We do it via Zoom meetings. The meetings that still are meeting live and in person, to my knowledge, have all adopted the no more than 10 people in a room concept. My home group is actually doing both. We are hosting the in-person meeting, and if 20 people show up, we're splitting into two groups of 10. If 30 people show up, we're splitting into three groups of 10. And simultaneously, we're hosting Zoom meetings because we know some people don't, they just don't want to put themselves in that situation. However, there's also people who don't have internet, and there's people who have struggles to get to Zoom meetings. So it's a big challenge. And in my personal life, I have waffled on this issue about whether we should go to all meetings as Zoom meetings or continue to host in-person meetings, albeit in a different format, small and only maximum number of 10. Because another trial in my sobriety was when my mom passed away a couple years ago. And my dad is currently 84. So he was 82 at the time, and he hasn't driven in like 10 years, and he suffers from Parkinson's disease and has other health issues as well. And my mom, even though she was 80, was very nimble and active, and she was the caretaker of the family, and she was holding that together. And my dad basically stayed at home all the time, and she went off and ran her little small business that she ran, and took care of things, you know, went to the grocery store and came home and paid the bills. And after she passed away, you know, my dad's, he was kind of helpless, right? He was having a hard time making a cheese and peanut butter sandwich on his own and washing dishes. And so I invited him to come live with me and moved him into my house. And we spent the first 6 to 9 months after that, you know, trying to clean out. They lived in their house for a really long time, and it was full of stuff. And so we had to clean it out. We had to sell stuff. We had to get rid of stuff. We had to put it on the market. We had to sell it. We had to do all that stuff, which was a lot of work. But at the same time, my life got turned upside down. I'm single. I'm a bachelor. I've never been married. I don't have any kids. Like I said, I like to isolate. And so my house was my, like my Superman fortress of solitude, right? I would come home, and if I just wanted to watch TV, I would watch TV. If I wanted to listen to music, I would listen to music. If I wanted to read, I would read. And I could come into my house and do whatever I want without any concern what else was going on. And all that got turned topsy-turvy upside down, right? I got my dad hanging out in the living room now. Even when I'm sick from work, I can't just lay on my couch and binge Netflix or whatever like I want to. So things got real different real quickly. There was no learning curve on it. Things just changed dramatically. And I don't know what happened. I don't know. I really don't know. I've had a hard time doing inventory on this. I know that I've talked with my sponsor about it numerous times. And recently I've talked with trusted home group members about it. And I've shared about it at meetings. But I got real angry. I got real angry and resentful, and not necessarily, it wasn't really being manifested at my dad. He also brought in two dogs with him, right? So I never had animals either. So I brought in a dad and two dogs, which became very challenging. And so the anger was manifesting itself out to the rest of the world. Resentment was settling in. Resentment towards AA was settling in. I got a lot going on, a lot more to do than I ever did before. I used to have plenty of time on my hands. I could go ride my bike and swim and work out and do stuff and had plenty of free time. and still go to meetings and be active in AA. But now I'm a caregiver, I'm a care provider. I'm a maid. I'm doing laundry. I'm doing extra dishes. I'm taking care of my dad. I'm cooking his meals, and I'm getting real angry and resentful. And AA is kind of inconvenient. It's taking up my time. I'd be better suited staying at home cleaning than going to meetings, right? And that's a bad place. It's a bad mindset for a guy like me to get into. And I think it was starting to come out sideways. Like sometimes when I'm sick spiritually, things come out. They're not head on assaults at the issue. But they come out in different ways. And one night before a meeting, my sponsor just pulled me aside and he was like, "Travis, what is going on? You need to talk to me. Something's going on. You're not returning my calls." And I just sat down and told him, I was like, "You're absolutely right." I was like, "I don't know what it is, but I'm angry, and I'm angry at everybody, and I'm angry at everything, and I'm not doing well." And we started talking about it, and he was like, "Okay." He's like, "What you need to do is you need to go to more meetings. You need to call more alcoholics. You need to start getting more engaged in AA, because the answer here is never less AA. The answer is more AA. AA, when, you know, people say, "Oh, AA gave me my old life back." No, not true at all. You wouldn't want my old life back. I don't want my old life back. AA gave me a brand new life, a better life. It gave me tools and principles and a connection with God that I never had before. Gave me a spiritual life to live. Gave me a host of friends, a fellowship. It gave me service work to do to help get out of my head. It gave me tools to live a better life. And so it's never less of that. This is the thing that's changed and saved my life for the better. And so when my sponsor made these suggestions, I still had just enough sense in my angry mind to follow directions and do what my sponsor said. And so I upped my AA attendance at meetings. I started reaching out to more alcoholics. I started making sure that me and my sponsees were talking more regularly and that I was talking with my sponsor more regularly. And lo and behold, things got better. My anger has subsided. Nothing's changed. Nothing has changed. I still don't have anywhere near as much free time as I had. My dad's two crazy dogs still run around and bark at the squirrels and are nuts. And my dad's still here and I got to do his laundry and cook for him and clean for him. And it's just better. Life is just better because I stayed active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that's the solution when times are hard, is to continue doing the things that I've learned here. And currently times are hard and I don't want to get sick and bring this disease into my household. And I don't want to isolate in my house either, because that's part of my disease. I am fortunate. I am blessed with a great job. I am the senior supervisor for the landscape department of the University of Virginia. And even though students are taking classes online and academic buildings are shut down, the hospital and clinic buildings are still open for business, and they have landscapes outside of them that need to be maintained to make those buildings look good. As well as if we shut down our operations on the closed academic buildings, if you don't mow grass for 3 months, we're going to have hay fields out there. If we don't maintain our flower beds, we're going to have 3 foot tall weeds everywhere. And while this may not seem like a critical function in healthcare senses, we are doing our best. I can't do that job by telecommuting. Right, we can't have meetings in our houses and mow grass and pull weeds. So we've tried to be creative and flexible at work, and we're doing divided the department into thirds. And so 20 people are going to go to work for a week, and then they're going to have 2 weeks off. And during that 2 weeks is when they can quarantine and gauge their health and take their temperature and check their pulse of their health. And if they get sick during those 2 weeks, then when we rotate back around, they do not come to work. They can stay at home and quarantine.
And in this system, we are hoping to allow a small skeleton crew to kind of just maintain things from getting too out of control and still keep groups small, only have one or two people in a truck at a time, only have one or two people working together at a time, and then they get 2 weeks off to make sure they're healthy. And I kind of see that as being a really nice model for running work, and it's creative. And maybe I can do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe if I do decide to go to some of these meetings where there's only 10 people there, I do that 1 week, but then the next week only do Zoom meetings and only come to places like this and make sure that I'm still healthy and safe and not spreading the disease or contracting it myself. Because this is I've never experienced anything like this in my life. And I was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. The last story I'll tell here is very early on in sobriety, and Billy was active in my sponsorship line. When this happened, he might remember some of this. I was less than a year sober, and just so many times in a row, I think in that first year, I went on 5 road trips where my sponsor was like, come on, we're going to Baltimore. Come on, we're going to Philadelphia. Come on, we're going to Williamsburg. Come on, we're going to Virginia Beach. Come on, we're going up near like Hagerstown, Maryland, Rushburg or Frederick, and all these places. And like we would get in the car, and Billy would get in the car, and Sage would get in the car, and this guy, Mark Nugent out of Richmond, and we would all do this stuff together. And I didn't know any better. I was 9 months sober, and it just seemed to me that that's what people did in Alcoholics Anonymous, that they were active, and they were going on road trips, and they were doing fellowship, and they were doing conferences, and they were going to meetings, and they were taking steps, and they were getting familiar with the literature, and they were getting familiar with the traditions, and you name it, we were doing the deal. And it was very important to me then, and it was drilled into my early habits in Alcoholics Anonymous, that that's how you stay sober and that's how you stay recovered, to have peace of mind and serenity. And so that's what I need to do. And it's what I need to do today, here and now, is still be active in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, still be active with my sponsor, still be active as best I can in these trying times. And if it comes down next week, we might find out tomorrow that there's no more meeting of 10 people allowed, but they change it to 5. Or I know some states are getting real close to everybody stay at home and don't go anywhere except for the grocery store. That's happening. It's real. And Alcoholics Anonymous is a very special program that helps people recover through fellowship, service, and the recovery of steps, right, and our step work. And so we need to treat our alcoholism as well as stay safe and be responsible citizens. And so all I got is be creative, people. And this is a really creative way to connect with one another and stay connected in the fellowship, carry a message of hope and recovery, and remember, this too shall pass. And that's all I got. Thank you.